And we're live. Hello, welcome to the Tavern Chat podcast. We have a more or less weekly episode of Talking Crit with myself, Eric Tenkor, my regular co-host on this, Bad Mike from North Texas RPG Con. And today we have a very special guest, Lloyd Metcalf. Lloyd is Fail Squad Games, artist, writer, game creator.
And Satan's Little Helper.
And Satan's Helper.
Well, you know what? And that's something that I'm sure we have to get into because as Satan's Little Helper, it's going to be interesting to hear the behind-the-scenes stories from North Texas RPG Con. So,
and possible litigation may follow those stories.
You know, so we're going to get into litigation. We can talk about the multiple people.
And we have enough litigation, yeah.
Everything I say represents North Texas RPG Con.
There you go. I've had implied legal threats because when I confront them with the legal threats, like, I never threatened you. Well, what was that? You may be in violation and you may get sued for. Well, I'm just giving you possibilities.
That's not how the law works, but
No. Your implied threat is a fucking threat. Okay? Sorry.
Oh, hold on. Before we start, I want to make sure I know where the mute and the video off button is on here because I might have to take a break, you know, kind of right in the middle of the show. And I want to make sure that, you know.
I'm going to keep this topical. You're not going to be like some certain person in the media who on a Zoom call decides that it's time to play with the Willy Winky.
Oh, that's not allowed. Okay, yeah.
No, it's not allowed on this.
Let's not do that. Yeah,
we're live on YouTube and Facebook, so we have actual standards, I guess.
Plus, I'd be looking at Lloyd's face at the same time. That's a turn off. I love you, Lloyd, but you know.
But at North Texas for the midnight auction, haven't you transformed into the Dark One himself? By Lloyd?
No, there's two different people. I don't know what you're talking about. Transformation. They're not. There's two people that come in there.
There's two people.
Yes. Two auctioneers at that. Yeah.
Okay.
So those don't know this. This is Lloyd Metcalf, artist extraordinaire. He is the promo domo of Fail Squad Games. And he is the longtime co-host of the Midnight Auction with me at North Texas. But I met Lloyd when he was doing art for Zach Glazer's Whisper and Venom.
Yeah.
And he said he found this hot new artist.
He told me the same thing.
Yeah, and he saw, and I was like,
I met Lloyd and he wasn't that hot.
Hot young, yeah. The young part's not true either.
Oh, I am 21. No,
I met him through there, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good stuff. And then he said the magic words. He said, hey, if you guys need a logo for North Texas, he works cheap and fast. I'm like, cheap and fast? My two favorite things. So we got Lloyd to do the logo that year. And or not the logo, the
flyer.
The flyer. Yeah, the flyer. I'm sorry, the flyer, not the logo, the flyer. And Lloyd's actually done a couple logos for us in the last few years. Did the logo for us last year, and then he did the logo. That was our 20th anniversary. Or, I'm sorry, 10th anniversary shirt he's showing right there. But
20th anniversary.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 10th anniversary. I'm bad at numbers.
If I don't call you on it, then you can't call me on my head.
That really snowballed really fast. I mean, I'm enjoying being the art director for GaryCon now, too.
Nice.
That's right.
That was like from GaryCon, I don't remember, 8 or something. That was my title, and it all just sort of like stuff happened real fast.
Yeah, Lloyd hangs around with some of the big names in the hobby. It turns out not like Eric and I. We're kind of lower tier, but he hangs out with some of the Gygaxes. You know, so
well, see, yeah, Lloyd will actually get to sit down with the Gygaxes. I get to walk by Luke and Wade.
Yeah. You get high five, bump the fist.
All the work I have to do behind the scenes kind of takes
you do pay for it. I'll grant you that much.
But somehow we do this thing in North Texas called the Midnight Auction where I dress up as the devil and I make very, very spurious claims on items. And we have a lot of fun. We make fun of people. We made fun of Eric 1 year, made fun of Alex Cameron 1 year. We do, but Lloyd's been my partner in crime And I was just thinking the day I was trying to remember, how did that even start? How did you start by being my right? So I'm the guy that dressed up in the Satan suit and acts crazy. Lloyd's kind of the straight man in a way, but Lloyd has a very undervalued sense of humor. He's a straight man, but he's a straight man that can also, you know, cut up and make people laugh too. So it's kind of, our yin and yang works perfectly up there. Now my brother did it one year and that yin and yang didn't work too much because we're both hams. We both, you know, had to try to steal a spotlight.
Time out. Is that the year your brother decided to wear the Speedos?
That was the next year, but that's a good example. That's a good example of why we are kind of like oil and water, whereas Lloyd and I fit together perfectly. Cause you know, cause Lloyd knows where the money is right here. Right. I mean, you know, he's just there to support me, you know, but no, I mean, how did that ever start? Did I ask you to do that? And why did I ask you? That just seems odd.
You had me just like, because you had so much stuff, you were having trouble tracking like who bought what and then payoff and stuff. So,
and you could write good because you write fast and to this, and I feel bad because yes, we make Lloyd write down bids and stuff really fast. And it's a tough job, but we have a lot of fun doing it. And, Lloyd gets to join in on the fun too. And his daughter Raven's been in on the fun a few times too. So we have a great time and Lloyd and I fit together really well.
But, I was unsure about it until there was the Devilettes. And then I was like, I'm doing this stuff the rest of my life.
Once the Devilettes came, Lloyd was absolutely in. But that first year we only had like what, 30 people show up, 30 people show up, 30, 40 people. It was pretty low key. And then I showed up as myself, and then halfway through I switched into my devil outfit that I was Satan. And then after that, it was like no question I was going to be Satan the whole time because everybody was just going nuts. Yeah. Like, oh my God, Satan.
Just a few goofball items, and now it's turned into Satan's Midnight Auction and North Texas RPG.
Yeah, and it's pretty much all goofball items at this point. And there's a lot of, shall we say, items that don't really shouldn't or not ready for prime time, so to speak.
But it's standing room only though every year.
It's gotten ridiculous at this point. It is standing room only. We have several hundred people in there, and it's great. We have a great time. But thanks Lloyd for doing that with me because it's been fun. In Lloyd's game for anything, because at one point, because I'll just throw something out there, and Lloyd just immediately runs with it. Because one year we had to auction off a board game called Orgasm, the game of sex position.
Oh, I remember.
And I don't remember. I think somebody from the audience shouted, "Act out the position."
Oh.
And so Lloyd and I did do that. We read the card out, fully clothed, you know, this is PG. Well, it's not PG. No, it's not PG at all. But yes, we were fully clothed. But Lloyd was, you know, he even took the, he was the one, I was actually the aggressor and he was the non-aggressor. So that he, you know, he's ready for anything.
Is this the game that the Stewart's been on in one?
So, but yeah, we have a great time doing that. We love Lloyd coming to the con every year. Like I said, he has helped us out with flyers and logos and he's also done, as a matter of fact, I had it right up here today. He's actually helped out the con with some, one year we had this little freebie that Lloyd did. It wasn't a freebie, actually, we got to charge for it, but Lloyd did the Nocturnal Trials of Ray's Perilous Grotto, which is NTRPG. So that was nice of Lloyd to do that too.
Mike, you have a comment that Mike should have been stuck with that game. I thought the Stewarts won that game.
Oh no, that was actually Skeeter won that game.
And then I
made the comment that congratulations, you want to use sex game.
Somebody he
was not happy. He was not happy with that.
Bids on, and then his wife bids on, and yeah.
But anyway, so that's if you come to the North Texas RPG Con, definitely you got to go to the Midnight Auction because Lloyd and I are there, and we have a great time. And Lloyd always auctions off some of his own artwork, and Lloyd is a fantastic artist, folks. He really is. And he one year I had a piece of paper I drew like a hold on, back it up. We can't see because
it just went into
there. Green. You go right there.
There we go.
That's like those
Prussian
things. Yeah, it's on the shelf right next to my desk here.
But every year we also sell some stuff. And so one year I drew a really terrible stick figure on a page. And so the joke was I was going to auction it off, but I was going to turn around and actually it was going to be professional artwork in the back. So I was going to pretend like everybody was bidding on my artwork, but actually they're going to be bidding on professional artwork in the back. So I asked Lloyd just to draw something back there, and I just figured he'd sketch something. He drew the most amazing, beautiful artwork I've ever seen, because I'm looking at it like, oh my God, this is. So I turned around, everybody in the audience gasped, because on the front is my little stick figure right. fighting a dragon. And I turn around and Lloyd didn't just draw just a sketch. He actually drew an absolutely beautiful piece of art. So I can't remember even who won that, but it was amazing.
Oh, it was like a lich or something, right?
It was really, really, really good.
You know why I did that? Because Jeff Easley, I always share a booth, or I'm near Jeff Easley whenever I'm at North Texas. And Jeff gave me the advice. It might have been that year that I first heard that advice. He's like, whenever you have to go to a convention, you have to do artwork on the fly, make it something undead or ugly. So if you screw it up, nobody notices. He says never draw
brilliant
on the spot at a convention.
That's why he is Jeff Easley. Yeah, he is. That's good. That makes sense. No, Lloyd's a great artist, and like I said, some of the art, I have an extra piece of artwork over here. I don't feel like I'm not going to get up in the middle of the show and get it, but he's done some artwork for us over the years too. We have some hanging up in the NTRPGCon warehouse here on the walls. It's some of Lloyd's earlier stuff. He'd probably be embarrassed to see it, but it's still great.
Me every once in a while. Yeah.
We had one of his earliest pieces up in the warehouse, and then Doug wanted to rotate it out, so we brought that up to the convention this year to auction it off, and it went for a pretty penny, Lloyd. I don't know if you saw what it went for, but
it was a bunch. I don't remember exactly, but
it did really well. And so we hung up another one of your early pieces there. So maybe we'll just do that every year. We'll rotate a piece in, but yeah, it did really well. People are looking for the early Lloyd Metcalf artwork now, because you never know how famous
that has like a big stack of pen and ink drawings from Whispering Venom. I auctioned some of them off. We got a little desperate when we were in Milwaukee. I had to pay rent, and I sold a bunch of the artwork. But there's Zach has a big stack of pen and inks from the very first Whispering Venom.
Yep. Death Attacks
was after that. That's right.
Yeah. No, but anyway, now you got Fail Squad Games. Do you have a Kickstarter right now, or is that Kickstarter?
Remarkably enough, it probably might have liches in it or something.
Well, what I started doing, I started doing a zine during the Kickstarter zine challenge a few years ago, and it had a little traction. So I popped up a website and a Facebook group and called it Maximum HP. And right now the Kickstarter is live. So it's Maximum HP issue number 4, The Undead.
Oh, I'm looking for it right now. I'm finding it. There it is. Yes.
Fifth edition and first edition.
Just put in Fail Squad Games Kickstarter and there you are. And it looks like it is funded. It has funded. It still has 10 days to go.
Oh yeah, nice. I'm at the second stretch goal, which is the virtual tabletop icons and maps. So for like Roll20 and all that kind of stuff, it'll have the full maps and stuff to run. There's an adventure in the middle of it called The Knights of Barrow-White that I wrote. It eats up more pages than I anticipated, but I'm leaving it in there anyway. I like it. It's kind of an unusual. There's a magical sitar and a bunch of creepy undead things. I don't want to give too much away.
And I just want to throw this out there too. So the great artwork runs in the family, because Lloyd's daughter Raven's also an artist, and Lloyd is a really, really good artist. Your daughter is absolutely ridiculous, Lloyd.
She's gotten really good. Yeah. In a lot of aspects, she's better than I am, for sure.
She's just absolutely amazing. And she's a lot younger than you too. So, she's got a lot more time.
Oh, she's older than I am, because I'm 21.
Oh, that's right. I don't know how did that happen.
The whole Back to the Future deal. But
she did the cover for this Maximum HP. She did that cover that's on it now.
It's a great cover. Yeah. Your daughter's extremely talented. She's real sweet girl too. So we've had her Nortex a couple of times. We're hoping to have her as a special guest, maybe as soon as next year, but we'll see. We'll see when we can get her, when things are back to where everybody travels all the time.
We're going to see about COVID. Extra cautious.
Yeah.
I mean, North Texas will probably be my first, God willing, return to the con.
Well, we're going
to
be very lucky next year, because it looks like we were unlucky last year, because it really started hitting bad right about the time of the con. We ended up having the con with masks and people being appropriate distances, but we still only had about 80 people there, which is understandable. And they're almost all
right.
We didn't want anybody to travel to go. But we're hoping next year by this, but you know, we've got another 6, 7, 8 months. Maybe travel restrictions will have eased up a little bit. Maybe won't be as bad. And so we might, you know, if we get us twice as many people as last year, we'll be happy. You know, we don't think we'll be back to maximum anytime soon. So
I think I'm probably going to have to cancel GaryCon, which is in March. I don't know. Colleen and I both have immediate family members who are immunocompromised, so we don't take a lot of risks in flying and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that by next summer it'll be mellow, but
Eric and I have talked a lot about cons because, you know, Total Con canceled, which is understandable, even though they've got a long way to go. They were going to be hitting right in the middle of flu season, and you know, it was going to be hard. We can understand where it's really hard for them to try to plan anything, but. GaryCon's just a little bit after, about a month afterwards. So it's going to be really interesting. I know Luke has said that they're going to cap at about 1,500. So that's about half what they had last year.
You're on the hook for some of that.
Oh, I know. It's really tough, right? I mean, right now is not a, you know, the worst thing right now planning a convention, you know this with AppleCon. So Lloyd last year had a successful AppleCon, which he had to cancel this year. Everybody that I know that went had a great time.
It was great for a number one. I was looking forward to number two.
I was going to go. My wife and I were ready to go. We had already planned to go and everything. And so we were bummed out. But it's just really the worst part is just not knowing. You just don't know. And so to err on the side of caution, you really just have to cancel.
Yep.
You know, and I know that's what happened with Alex also. Alex Kamer also with
Gamo. I give Alex a lot of credit because he made that call early on. He saw the writing on the wall and
was smart.
You know, it was smart not just for the con, but it was smart for all of the possible attendees. So you don't have people getting plane tickets, reserving hotels, and having to cancel. You don't disappoint people if you canceled it before you started signing people up for it.
Up here in Maine, there's a really big fair every year. It's Freiburg Fair. It has like 50, 60,000 people come to it, and they canceled the fair, which is a huge financial strike to the community. But their reasoning was, and this is, I felt the same way with the convention. Their reasoning was like, while we don't have any legal liability, if somebody gets sick at the fair, there's like this sort of social liability where everybody knows where you got sick, you know?
Right. And it's moral too. As a member of the community, you're like, I don't want to be responsible for getting others sick.
Right.
And we all love our face-to-face time. I miss getting to, you know, sit down at the table for Frog God, spend my time with Mike. We've been doing this now for years, different cons. I enjoy it. I look forward to it. I don't need to play any games because I'm socializing. And you miss out on that. But I think it's better to miss out on it than put myself, Rach, others at risk.
It's also a little greedy because I couldn't live with myself if Tim Kask drove up to AppleCon and then got sick here. Like, I'd have to live with myself.
You'd never hear the end of it.
There was a few people because North Texas gears more towards the older audience and older special guests. We had to literally talk a few people out of it because they were saying we're going to come, we're coming.
Oh, yeah.
We said we really don't want you to come, not because we don't love you, but because we love you, we don't want you to come. And I think the only person that ended up coming was Diesel, because he just drove from Austin. He and his wife lived like 3 hours away, right. And he came up. But other than that, we argued with a few people and basically said, "Don't come. We don't want you to come. We know you'd love to come, but it's just not. You know, if you got sick here, we would never forgive ourselves. I mean, it would be a black mark on the hobby and a black mark on our con. And not only that, you know, it would have been because of us that you're not able to do cons anymore. We strongly encourage people of a certain age not to show up. And that was, unfortunately, most of our special guests are falling into that category.
It's an old school con. That's what you're going to have.
Yeah.
And it's really sad because I know the thinking of a lot of those guys is they don't have a lot of cons left in them, which I understand that. And so they don't want to miss a con. And one of the reasons we even had the con was because for those who don't know, my partner Doug is he's got stage 4 colon cancer. He doesn't have a lot of cons left. You know, and right. So he didn't want to have to miss out on one. So he basically told everybody, you know, here's the choice. I mean, I will pay, you will either get your money back or you can attend this year. But we're not asking you to attend. We're just really having the con just for locals. And we still had about 80 people, but it was, you know, how big the space is we're in. Yeah. Well, imagine we usually have 500 people. Imagine only 80 people in that space. There was a lot of distancing going on. It was extremely distanced because they were just, we still had the whole convention. The hotel gave us the whole property because they didn't have anybody else there. Yeah. There was no reason not to give us the whole thing. I mean, it wasn't like they had people knocking down their doors in June that, you know, really, really want to, you know, use their space. But yeah, it's, I understand a lot of these people really, really want to attend. And I mean, I want to go to cons too. I love going to cons, but I'm looking ahead in the future and thinking, you know, we were always kind of dodging a bullet, weren't we? And I know Eric got sick at, you know, right around TotalCon last year.
Yeah. I got sick at TotalCon. I can't blame it on con crud. It was an upper respiratory infection that turned into pneumonia and sepsis. But yeah,
I mean, that's always at risk. You're always at risk for that any con, and to up the stakes with COVID, you know, makes it even worse. So it's got me thinking about the future. You know, do I really want to attend a really big con? Those might be in my rearview mirror. I don't think a lot of big cons are going to be on my schedule from here on out because we were dodging bullets for a long time because we're in that certain age and that, you know, I'm not the healthiest guy. I think I'm healthy, but you know, most people don't.
And the thing is too, it's like, I mean, you're saying like big cons, Game Hall is a big con. It's got a lot of space. You don't really feel it's as big as it is because it certainly is more spaced out. Mm-hmm. GaryCon was hitting the limits of its available space. Right. With the numbers it was hitting, it'll be better this year with half the total.
We were preparing to hit capacity, if COVID hadn't happened, we were about to hit capacity where we are now in the new venue,
right? And
Eric and I can't remember if you were at you were at GaryCon 2019 too, right, Lloyd? I can't remember if you were or not.
Last year?
No, last year. You came last year, didn't you?
Well, we canceled last year.
Okay. So Eric and I were there, and it was pretty dark. It was full. It was absolutely packed full. And we were even talking to ourselves, like, how are they going to keep this going? Because they're going to have to start cutting off people because they
there was still room to squeeze more in that year in 2018. Yeah, I was there. But we thought this year we were going to start capping out and turning people away. But then we were the first convention, I think, in the circuit to cancel. It was a hard call, man. We debated it for a long time. Like, how would it work if we didn't? Can we live with ourselves if we do, if we don't?
Well, we remember when it happened because it all happened so quick. It was in March, and we start out March like, okay, you know, there's COVID, but it's not that bad. And then all of a sudden, boom, 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 2 weeks later, everything's getting canceled. And that's right where GaryCon, I mean, literally 2 weeks before GaryCon,
we went from cancel to virtual con in 10 days. And it was, I think we all call that first virtual GaryCon a success.
Good.
Considering how quickly it was put together, it was absolutely amazing.
The Jason Riff was like, Matt was amazing in helping us get that together. But yeah, it went together fast, and there was a lot of conference calls and a lot of like last minute figuring it out, but it worked.
I think that there's going to be a real push, not just on VTTs but virtual cons. Technology is going to get pushed forward with this whole COVID. And allowing us to telecommute, telegame, telecon. I think that, you know, people are going to find solutions to make it closer to reality, but it's still going to be virtual. It's still not going to fulfill that need of, you know, hanging out at a convention, having a few beers with friends you only see 2 or 3 times a year.
It's not the same. Yeah,
it's not the same, but, you know, you're going to get closer to it. Maybe not quite, but
Well, so let's look at some of the current events. We haven't been on. So I seem to two weeks ago, as Eric and I were wrapping up our last talking grit, we're like, you know, we'll probably see you again. You know, if we're lucky, Watsy will do something stupid the next couple of weeks. We'll have a show again.
Never.
We're so prescient. It's not even funny because you can just set your clock by the dumbness coming out of Watsy at this point. I don't know. Eric, why don't you talk about this a little bit and we'll.
Wizards of the Coast Dragonlands fiasco.
Yeah, talk about that and we'll talk about that and then we'll go to our other wacky.
Which will also potentially involve Wizards of the Coast. Oh, you lost Lloyd.
Lloyd. Maybe he had to. Maybe he's doing something to himself. I don't know.
he has the link and he comes back. I'll throw him back in.
All right.
But in any case, oh, and here's Lloyd.
He's already back.
He's already back.
That was quick, Lloyd.
Something happened. I don't know. I bounced myself when I was navigating.
Keep your hands off yourself. Okay?
Yeah. You're not a lawyer. Media. You don't get a free play to play.
No, you can't do that.
So apparently, Wizards of the Coast is being sued by Tracy Hickman and Margaret Weis, the original authors of Dragonlance, and they were being brought back in to write three new novels. And apparently, had one novel written. We're working on the second one. The first one was from my reading of the lawsuit, the first one was pretty much approved and then disapproved, it seems, because they were already working on a second one, when two new editors were brought in. And apparently, there were more changes that were being required. And there's a lot of talk online about what these changes entailed. Being that one of the new editors brought in was apparently accused a year prior for writing a book that was misogynist and sexist and any other ifs that you want. And Wizards of the Coast, they do allude to in the lawsuit that Wizards of the Coast has been under scrutiny for, I guess, racist practices within the company, not being gay friendly, sexist. I mean, I'm sure there's. They had that the Magic the Gathering card fiasco. The cards weren't apparently appropriate. So there is talk going on. I don't have an inside scoop, but there's talk that the reasons why is that they were perchance being asked to retcon characters within the series to be other than they were when the series was initially written. In a way, kind of like the Picard series, where Seven of Nine is now apparently lesbian when she didn't she have like an affair with Chakotay back in Voyager. So that's like
now, and I can't. I'm looking forward to that. I haven't got to the Seven of Nine switchover yet, but
yeah,
I think you're right.
Yeah. So I mean, I do understand that times have changed. I also know that Tracy Hickman apparently is a very religious Mormon, although Margaret Weis apparently is pretty liberal in her outlook on life, from what I understand. I've been told by sources that worked for her and her husband when they had a store in Lake Geneva.
I absolutely love Margaret. She's a wonderful lady. I don't know Tracy that well.
I don't know either one, but I've only heard good things about them. But if nothing else, it appears that Wizards of the Coast decided that, well, the way the contract is written, if we cancel the contract, we're screwed. So we're not going to cancel the contract, but we're not going to approve any more of the changes that you might make to come within what we want. And we're telling you now that no matter what you do, we're not going to approve it, but we're not canceling the contract. So, yeah.
I just had an interesting conversation just before the show with Steve Marsh, and we were talking about this very thing. I'm not at liberty to say, to repeat the conversation, but he definitely, he's a lawyer guy.
Yes.
So he had some interesting insights but it's all about contract. It's a lot about contracting the way I understand it, you know,
Apparently too, there's a history between, with Weiss and Hickman and Wizards of the Coast, in the early era of third edition, Hickman and Weiss were basically given a license by Wizards of the Coast to develop Dragonlance as a third party. And there was also a contract for at least Margaret Weiss to write 10 Dragonlance books for Wizards of the Coast. And then Wizards of the Coast canceled the license for Dragonlance. So she had an out on the books and said, well, if you're, you know, canceling this license, and let's be honest, whenever somebody's license is canceled for anything, whether it's Star Trek, Star Wars, you have things in development that are now, you know, money sunk into it that's going to go nowhere. She said, well, I'm not writing the books then. I have an out. So you can be damn well sure that when Weiss and Hickman signed the contracts for the current series that they were working on, you can damn well be sure they had a very good contract lawyer prepare it with them. Because I can't see them putting themselves in a spot where Wizards can screw them again. So it'd be interesting.
We talked about this before. So, and we're all laymen here, and we all know just as much as everybody else knows. And it's funny to it's been funny to watch all the comments online because you get the comments like, man, I hope that Weiss and Hickman just kill him in court and get $10 million and
$3 million with penalties.
Here's the deal, guys. This will never even sniff the inside of a courtroom.
Nope.
This is an opening salvo by Weiss and Hickman's lawyers to get the court of public opinion on their side and say, look at these two beloved Dragonlance authors and the big, mean, ugly Watsy, the ones who put out those terribly sexist Magic the Gathering cards, the ones that screwed over
Orion Black,
they basically just made misstep after misstep this year. Look, they're just making another misstep because they're just morons. and now they're making a misstep against, you know, Weiss Hickman, two of the most beloved figures in the hobby. This is what we like to call a negotiating ploy. I can't believe there wasn't a kill fee associated with these books in some way, shape, or form, because almost every contract
was. That's why Wizards of the Coast doesn't want to invoke it.
So either the kill fee, they don't want to invoke it, but so by saying we're not going to invoke it, they force Weiss and Hickman's lawyers to say, well, then we're going to say all these ugly things about you. And so the problem with Watsy is they're not going to say anything publicly because their lawyers have told them to shut the F up and not say anything. So we're never going to hear their – because people are like, well, I want to hear their side of it. You're never going to hear their side of it. There's not a chance in hell you're going to hear their side of it. They're going to say, due to advice to our lawyers, we're not going to comment on ongoing litigation. That's all you're going to hear from them. So all we're left is with, Weiss Hickman say, woe is me, and we're getting screwed over. And they very well might be. We don't know. Everybody knows as much as everybody else knows. Right. But this is going to go to Settlement City. There will be a check will be cut at some point, and everybody will be happy, and they'll all pat each other on the back and say, and yes, Charlie Fitch said I said that. This is just doing exactly what it's doing. If you look at all the forums online and Facebook, it's having all these fans come out and say, how dare they treat Weiss and Hickman like this? I hope they get, and they're just gauging public opinion. Right now, public opinion is not really on Watsy's side. Watsy's made number of mistakes.
Alex Kimber was saying that their opening documents there were really elaborately worded, like emotionally charged, not the typical dry reading of an initial, motion or whatever.
Sure, you know? Right. because they knew you and I and Eric would be reading them, people like us, right. that they didn't want to make it really dry and motionless and all the facts. And that's why I laugh when some people said, I can't believe a lawyer wrote this. It's so full of all this flowery, furry language. That was on purpose. That's absolutely on purpose. That they wanted us to be able to understand it. And they wanted to be able to say stuff like, you know, Weiss and Hickman are rock gods when it comes to, you know, because somebody objected. I saw somebody object that, like, no lawyer uses the term rock gods. Or, yes, they do when they're trying to elicit emotion. Of course they do. So that this is an elaborate, you know, I mean, look, Weiss and Hickman can afford really good lawyers. Let's put it that way. Maybe not as much as maybe not as expensive as Weiss's lawyers, but still really good lawyers. And so I'm sure that they know exactly what they're doing. And this is a very calculated move on their part. So they can come to him in a month and say, man, you guys are getting beat up online. I mean, you guys are getting absolutely just hammered. You know, wouldn't it be just great if you just cut a check and this could all go away, and then Margaret and Tracy would come out and say it was all a misunderstanding and everything's going to be fine now. So
I still don't think they'll do the kill fee. I mean, in an art contract, when I have a kill fee, it's 75% of the final fee. I can't imagine they're going to throw down the money without something. You know, for the kill fee, I think, I don't know, man.
Here's the thing, and I'll be honest with you, the paperwork that they got served with is right about this. They are in the midst of a horrible, first off, we're in the world of COVID. So people are bored out of their ass, and Wizards of the Coast screwing up is like free entertainment. Okay, so people are just on top of it. And to run this on top of it, now I've heard it said that it's possible these two new editors were brought in because the prior editors weren't willing to screw with Weiss and Hickman. So let's bring in two people, one of whom owes us their job because we didn't fire them when they became a public liability, and make them the bad boys and have them say, well, you could change dwarves into elves and lead into gold. We're still not going to sign off on anything that you submit to us right now, but we're not canceling the contract. You know, and that seems to be the route they took.
I mean, that's the most lawyerly of all lawyerly things to say. We're not going to cancel your contract, but, you know, we're basically going to cancel your contract. I mean, you know, we're going to weasel word this. And we only have, you know, I mean, and I love Margaret. So for those who don't know, Margaret and Tracy actually showed up in North Texas several years ago. We were not allowed to say they could show up because they have a fee with some conventions where they have an appearance fee. And they said, we will waive your appearance fee to go to your small con if you just don't advertise we're going to come. So we did, and they came. They were very just absolutely wonderful people. To come to a con with like 500 people, stars of that magnitude, is amazing. I mean, they're really nice people. But we don't know exactly what they were asked or not asked to put in or take out in the books. I mean, they implied that it was kind of SJW wokeness and we can't name the character certain thing. I mean, but we don't know. And look, they can say whatever we want because we're probably not going to ever see these books. I mean, I have a feeling these books are going to be, unfortunately, you know, put aside and probably never come back to again. So we don't really know what they were asked or how they were asked to do it. And I think Eric talked about this, and I have talked about this, is that they could have asked, and this happens a lot too. Directors do this a lot. They'll tell a director, we want this, this, and this in your movie. And then the director doesn't do any of that and says, well, yeah, I kind of did. I just did this, this, and this. Well, they could have told Weiss Hickman, like, well, we want you to change this, this, this. And they don't really change it, and then bring it back to them and say, yeah, here we go. Like, well, you really didn't change. We told you to change. Yeah, well, we just kind of implied it. And we did, you know, so you can't really say, you know, who is the bad guy or good guy here. There's probably no bad guys or good guys.
There's always a bad guy in a lawsuit. A bad guy.
Well, it's just business. But it's just business. This is just
I know. Listen, you're talking to somebody who got sued for $2 million, okay, when I was an active police officer for an event that I showed up to after it finished. And I wasn't even there when it went down. We're pulling up and it's like, hey, they're driving off. Hey, oh, you know, 2 months
close
later.
It up. close enough.
I'm being sued for $2 million. This is awesome.
As a fan, I'd really like to see Margaret and Tracy get the IP of Dragonlance and let them just have it. I would love to see that.
WotC will never let that
IP. They're not going to let it go. That's what I want as a fan.
Because someday there still has never been a big budgeted what's going to make a lot of money someday is a big budget Dragonlance movie. And that will make a lot of money someday. And that hasn't happened yet. And until that happens, the IP is not going anywhere. Because if a live action Dragonlance movie is done right, it will make a lot of money.
They've got the past association for, they bought it from TSR and everything. Yeah. So they get their past association. So even if they did hand that IP off to Weiss and Hickman and say, here, you can have Dragonlance, every time they produce something, it's going to have an air of Dungeons and Dragons. So you're right. They'll never let it go for that reason too.
But there's still a lot. I mean, there's, even if they're not producing and a lot of people had said that this is really WotC shooting themselves in the foot, because if they were willing to back a huge trilogy by the original authors, Weiss and Hickman, surely they had something planned for 5e Dragonlance, right?
Definitely.
I mean, this would be a perfect launching point for a 5e rule set for Dragonlance. Well, with the books not coming out now, that kind of just seems to kill that whole idea. And then that's a lot of money they just left on the table then, if that's true. I mean, if that's true, that's almost criminal, the amount of money they would have made. Because there are, if nothing else we've seen in the last week, there are a lot of loyal Dragonlance fans still out there, and a lot of Dragonlance fans that will be willing to spend a lot of money, even if they don't play 5e, they would still buy the books. Because there's people out there that have bought all 80 Dragonlance or 100 Dragonlance books and still have the Dragonlance posters on their wall, and they read it when they were kids, and now they read the books to their kids.
Through second edition, the Dragonlance was the dragons in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's a huge moneymaker. I mean, the books were on the Time bestseller list for years. I mean, they're in their 50th printing. I mean, whatever. I mean, so there's a lot of money there. Once he's not letting that IP go, I mean, heck, maybe they don't do anything with it until 6th edition. Who knows? But at some point, a movie studio is going to come calling. Maybe Disney, maybe somebody else, and say, look, well, we think we can do a Dragonlance movie. And it's a very cinematic trilogy. I mean, I haven't read it in 30 years, but it was a very cinematically written trilogy.
And it was full of tropes, but they were tropes that work.
Yeah. Tropes that work, fantasy tropes that work. It's very PG, you know, that there's the brothers, you know, that's all the, you know, the Raistlin and Stern. I mean, there's just all kinds of cool things in there that anybody would love to get their hands on that's making a movie trilogy. And it's kind of writes itself almost. Until that has been explored more fully, you know, once they'll just sit on it. They're not going to, you know, they won't do anything with it. If what Weiss and Hickman are saying is true, and this was the result of, you know, we don't think you're woke enough, that's crazy. I know this sounds stupid for me to say it, but I can't believe WotC would be that stupid.
I don't believe Hasbro would be that stupid.
WotC, I
can believe it because they are playing defense right now. Okay. And when you're stuck playing defense, you don't think ahead. You think in the moment. Okay. When you're playing offense, you can think plays 3, 4, 5 plays in advance. When you're playing defense, it's this moment right now. How am I going to deflect? How am I going to block? How do I stop the angry mobs from burning down my company? And the sad thing is, and the reality is, that when it comes to angry mobs in gaming or multimedia or online, your gaming mobs usually you can count on one or two hands, but those are the loud voices that you hear. The vast majority are people that just want to enjoy their entertainment, whatever it is, without any other baggage attached to it. But, you know, when all you hear on the Twitterverse is, oh my God, how can you bring back Dragonlance? Dragonlance has no POC, or Kender have to be an analog to what nationality? What about Gully Dwarves? What a horrible representation they are of minuscule people. I mean, The Angryverse of Twitterverse is insane.
I'm surprised there's any fantasy being written at all nowadays. I mean, that's why I don't read any most modern
fantasy. I don't either.
Because I don't know how you write fantasy without offending someone. I mean, just someone somewhere is going to be offended by fantasy. I mean, I've got my Robert E. Howard Museum shirt on. You know, Robert E. Howard would be stoned out of the industry if he tried to write something now. I mean,
oh God.
But not just Robert E. Howard. And look at a lot of the fantasy writers. Even Robert Jordan stuff wouldn't stand muster now. A lot of the modern writers, just even 20 years ago, their stuff is problematic.
I honestly don't have a problem with being sensitive to a degree. I'm starting with this edition and my future adventures. I'm paying some people to be sensitivity readers. Like I personally, for my own sanity, I want to know if I accidentally stepped across the line or something, and I can make the decision to edit or not. You know, so I don't think it's that bad to be conscious of the sensitivity, but you hit this point where it can sort of chain back the creativity a little bit. I'm in the middle of the road with the whole idea.
Yeah, there's a balance that you have to find,
right?
And I think the knee-jerk reaction is to swing too far in the one direction. You know, you have to like balance out a pendulum. It shouldn't be swinging at all.
Sure,
we're doing that swing right now.
Yeah,
and, it's an overcompensation.
We should be okay with people being conscious of we need to be sensitive to this stuff as well. You know, not just because it's also a knee jerk reaction to like, those.
They're screwing with my stuff. Get off my lawn.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
But I mean, you got to get in a corner because let's say I wanted to write a fantasy trilogy next week. And so I think, well, you know, my protagonist is going to be a white male because I'm a white male, right? I mean, I don't want my protagonist to be, a race and a sex that I'm not, because it's hard for me to get in that mindset. So when I write my fantasy trilogy, it's a white male. Do I get, feedback that says, well, you know, this fantasy, your fantasy is just really a power fantasy of white males. You should have had a black female protagonist. And my reply would be, I'm not a black female. For me, that's hard to get in that mindset. I would feel bad about doing that because I would feel like you said, I'm not being sensitive to something I don't know. So I think you kind of write yourself in a corner there because you want to write about what you know. But yet that may restrict you in some ways by saying, well, you know, here's what I know, but because that's what I am, it's going to be hard for me to write from another point of view without. For instance, Frog Guy, we just put out a Mesoamerican supplement called Tehoidal, and we had a sensitivity reader who was a South American professor of Mesoamerica culture, because we wanted to make sure we didn't step on any toes, because none of us, the artists we used were all South American artists, but none of the writers or editors were obviously from South America. So, we thought it was good to use a South American voice to, look there and say, look, this is probably problematic. You don't want to talk about this. This you can talk about this. I mean, so I think, like Eric said, there's a happy medium. I think there's a happy medium, and the pendulum sometimes swings too far either way. Because of this, we're going to react to this totally over the top.
I know there's somebody out there right now watching the same news. Oh, look at these three white cis, older men talking about
Sex,
and it's tough. But I've written in gender neutral, poly characters into adventures. But I always want to check in. When I do that, I want to check in with somebody who identifies that way and make sure that I just didn't totally say something horrendous. And you can write outside of it, but man, it's so much easier for me to write a middle-aged white guy.
You write what you know, right? That's
but you gotta
I'll admit, here's the issue. When you write outside what you know, what do you probably default to? Stereotypes, right? Because that's what human nature is. If we don't know something well in our mind, we put it into a category.
But there's the author responsibility of doing some research.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Is that Billy? Like Mike said, he's not a female individual of color. And now, Maybe I wouldn't have known that if it wasn't for the fact that we're recording this on video, but I probably could have surmised it from the way he talks and his general attitude. But it is hard. And in a way, here, quick case in point. I worked as a cop in the South Bronx at the beginning of my career in the late 90s. But I was always a city. I grew up in a city. I went to public schools. And trying to interact with the crowd or at a crime scene and going by the book of, excuse me, sir, excuse me, ma'am, it is inadvisable for you to cross, as opposed to, you're my man, can I have words with you? Yo, what's the bird in the street? What's going on? I was talking in authentic language to them, which broke down a barrier, but I was around it enough that I could be authentic. It wasn't like somebody from, I don't know, Mike, Texas, coming out and trying to be in the streets of the South Bronx. You know, what are you all doing over here?
That would eat me alive.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of the joy of being a writer, though, is exploring that stuff. I don't know if you can. I've done some behind me over here. It's like a piece of a series I did where I had some drag. I was doing art of drag queens. I had a queen come in and get into costume, and we had a class that drew and painted and all that sort of stuff together. And it began this journey of like sort of investigative, like, you know, here's this thing that I don't know about. But then when you know, so I feel like I could write a drag queen into an adventure now and be competent and bounce it off people and have it hit, you know.
But you probably still get hit. But you know, somebody would come forward and say, "Well, Lloyd, you're not a drag queen, so you know you really don't know what you're talking about." I mean, you would always get that, right? Because in some ways, you might be falling back on people you know, because all you can write is what you know. So, you know, even if you met 10 drag queens, you'd only know stuff from their point of view,
and then somebody else would have them. Right. But that's what I'm talking about. Like that's why sensitivity readers are important, because I if I write them in, then I can find people who identify with that. But it's nice to have people that you don't expect be the hero of the story. Because like when we did the whole drag queen series, it was like these people who are used to sort of being on the undersoul of everyone. And with suddenly there was 20 people, you know, sort of celebrating their identity, their lives, you know, whatever.
Well, we don't know. So, and that's the whole thing with this Weiss Hickman thing. We don't know what changes, because at one point of the lawsuit, they said they were asked to rewrite about 70 pages of material, which is pretty substantial amount, probably a whole chapter or more. And what we don't know exactly what were they exactly asked to change it? Was it something relatively minor and they just balked at it and said, nope, you know, we've been doing this for 30 years. We know what we're doing. We're not going to do it. Or was it something major where they said, wait a second. No. That's so major that we don't want to even deal with it. So
yeah, it changes the whole story.
Yeah, that's not the story we want to write. In other words, we're not doing that just because you want us to put, you know, something in there that, we, you know, whatever, because you think it's going to sell.
And Eric had mentioned, you know, Tracy's religious standing. It may have been something that was would totally be uncomfortable and out of character for him. And not only would do a disservice to himself, but to those people he's trying to represent in the writing. Yeah, right. It may be wise to just, you may be right. I mean, of course, like you said, none of us know, but it may be wise if Tracy's not comfortable investigating, and I don't know if that's the case, but if he's not comfortable investigating, immersing, and writing a character that is counter to everything that is part of his existence, it probably shouldn't exist. I mean, from either direction, it shouldn't exist.
And we don't know. And that's the whole thing is we're probably never going to know, because this is all lawyer machinations, and that this was done to get public opinion on their side so they can roll up in a couple months and say, boy, you guys are just really getting hammered. wouldn't you like to write a check right now and then just, you know, not have to worry about this? Or,
and here's,
you
know, the NDA that we will sign willingly.
Yeah, we won't say anything about this. You know, we'll all be buddies. I mean, I always remember, I mean, totally different out of nowhere, but when Jerry Jones fired Jimmy Johnson way back in 93, they apparently did detested each other. At that point, they were both just couldn't stand each other. And yet there they were, you know, with their arms around each other the day, you know, here's your check, Jimmy. And we just loved having you for the Cowboys. He's like, I just love being coach here. You know, this is the funnest thing ever, you know. And of course, it was because he got a check. You know, he got cut a check and had to sign an NDA saying you're not going to, you know, you're not going to tell anybody what a piece of garbage Jerry Jones is. Right. And here's your check for $5 million, you know.
It might be like, too, because I vaguely remember Bob Salvatore saying something about, like, oh, I hope I don't have to write another Dritz book, you know.
Well, Bob, we were talking about that too. You know, Bob had a very well publicized row with Watsy way back when about some stuff, and I can't remember if this was, I don't remember how many years ago this was, but at a certain point, he was basically somebody else wrote two Dritz novels,
yeah,
and then they made up and they kissed and made up with Bob, and Bob came back. So I don't know what happened, but I remember at the time they had a very public separation there, you know, because he was the only one that had written Drist novels up until a certain point, and then they said, you know, we're not going to deal with Bob anymore, and they had a couple more, and then after that, I guess the sales weren't where they wanted to be, and they said, please come back, Bob. We're gonna, you know, now we're gonna let you do what you want to do.
You actually were worth the investment.
Okay. Yeah, you know, what do we know? We don't know. Those were different people. Those were they don't work here at the company anymore. You know, we love you, Bob. You know, so it's interesting to see what's going to happen with it. Like I said, this is kind of the first salvo. We may not see anything else because I'm sure that their lawyers are told not to comment. I'm sure Watsy's lawyers have told them not to comment. Yeah. But it's just another in a long string of black eyes for Watsy. Nobody hates COVID as much as these guys, because with nothing else to do, all we've been able to do is just sit back and watch them just get kicked in the nuts month after month after month, you know, because they can't stop the bleeding because there's no conventions to go to. There's no organized play leagues going on. I mean, there's some online, but the stuff in, I mean, that's a huge thing about organized play. Those will fill up a gigantic room full of players when you have a convention. Well, that's all been gone except for online this year. That's all out the window. I mean, this is just a lot of stuff that people don't have time to do anything but sit around and talk ass about, you know, about they Watsy.
Talk crit. Yeah,
like, yeah, we're talking crit. They're talking crit about Watsy.
I don't, it should be a dream job, but Watsy's the one company that I really don't want to work for. I've heard some of the stories of what their contracts look like, and now that they have this like really strict style guide, and I probably couldn't match the style guide anyway, so. That aside.
Oh, you mean well, I know somebody that, yeah, you're right, Lloyd. they have it's very strict how you write for them. And it's one of those things where, you know, it's kind of your dream come true. I wrote a D&D adventure for the company that does D&D, but there's a lot of changes you'd have to make to do that.
I really liked that in the red box, I could flip through real quick and tell, like, oh, this is Elmore. Oh, this is Easley. You know, I enjoyed that. But now I can't. I know a lot of people say they can pick out artists in there, but I can't. The style guide is so, like, you know. And Charles Urbach has said. I mean, Charles Urbach is an amazing artist, and he said that like they ask for a lot of revisions and stuff to get to the end result, which is still the magic cards that Charles did is still his style and stuff. But it's not the same. It wasn't the same liberty that the folks had when TSR was
there. Well, some of the writers I know writers for Watsy, and they've said the same thing, that they'll turn in a draft and they'll get it back like, hey, you can't really do this, and this is a little too over the top, and you know, you need to change this to this, and so,
and maybe that's it. Maybe there's a style guide that they're looking for, you know, in this release.
I mean, I know old TSR did the same thing. Every company does that, you know, but I've heard that Watsy, I know. I can't name them on the air, but I know somebody that's written for TSR and Watsy, and they've said, yeah, Watsy's pretty strict on what they tell you that you can and can't do. I mean, you can turn it, you'll turn in whatever you want to turn in, but then they'll get back later like, yeah, we need to see changes here and there on this, this, and this, because.
Well, maybe I shouldn't say who told me what.
Oops.
Sorry,
Charles. I'll scrub that. No clue how to scrub it. Sorry. If you haven't listened to the podcast here. On Tavern Chat, there's no editing.
We don't care. We really don't care.
I don't think I haven't said anything that Charles didn't say out loud anyway. So
right. So you see, There you go. That's the way it should be.
So we spent some good time on that. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of chuckles and laughs in the future.
Oh, I'm sure the next expense. Week or two they'll be.
This is Eric's going to have to lay this out and explain this whole thing because something else happened this week.
Oh, okay.
That is kind of long and involved, and I had to read it 5 times before I understood what was going on. And then once I understood what was going on, I was like, okay, I understand now. But maybe you can lay it out and. Better, and we can figure it out the first go through here. So, what else interesting happened this week, last week, Eric, in the world of RPGs and such? Well,
the Dungeon Hobby Shop Museum in Lake Geneva, which is located at the location of the old, mail order hobby hobby store.
Yep.
One of the original locations of TSR, said that they had acquired the trademark to TSR and were going to license the iconic visual trademarks, about 5 of them. So, and all of a sudden, I guess within like minutes of them posting it, my phone's going crazy. I'm getting IMs and getting emails. Did you see this? So I'm like, huh. All right, let me do a little digging. And what it is this. Apparently, new TSR, I'm going to call it new TSR because they aren't the old classic TSR that was acquired by Wizards of the Coast. New TSR, like 9.5 years ago, registered TSR as a trademark. They wound up publishing Top Secret New World Order. And their trademark, their federal trademark, was canceled. For one reason or another, I don't know. It wasn't abandoned. It didn't expire. It was canceled. So the Dungeon Hobby Shop Museum jumped on that and registered TSR in Wisconsin on a state level as a trademark. So far, I'm just going to give you the facts.
All right.
So after getting TSR as a trademark for Wisconsin, which, by the way, means that it's only a protected trademark within Wisconsin and would be trumped by the federal trademark if the trademark was created prior, in other words, they have precedence, then the Dungeon Hobby Shop Museum, it's like a tongue twister, they decided that they were going to register 5 of the iconic visual trademark symbols from the old TSR, pre-Wizards of the Coast, and they were going to file registrations on the federal level. And these registrations are currently pending. All right, they haven't even been reviewed yet. But once they got their applications in, and I guess they went in August and September, applications are in over the weekend. They announced that they had the trademark. TSR is alive again, and we are licensing these iconic images to publishers to use. And that started a whole brouhaha online. But again, at this point, there's no conjecture. These are the actual facts. Right now, I know for sure, new TSR, not the... New TSR, who had their trademark canceled, is dealing with lawyers to find out why the trademark was canceled and have it reinstated. The other thing is, and I didn't know about this, huge shout out to the Frugal GM, Chris. You know, he does the blog posts on Sunday at tankerstavern.com. Chris went and he actually did something that, hell, I should have done, which was actually read the pamphlet from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, which says getting a trademark from them just means that it's a registered trademark. Yes. However, you don't have to have a registered trademark to have a trademark. Common law takes effect. In other words, I don't have a registered trademark for 10 Cars Tavern, but if somebody tries to trademark 10 Cars Tavern, common law would say it's still my trademark. I might have to fight to retain it. But it's there. So now new TSR has the common law right to their TSR trademark, and they also have to try to get their registered trademark status reinstated. As for the visual trademarks from people I've spoken to, that apparently trademark law is very confusing. I can believe it. But Wizards of the Coast is still, again, here's a fact, Wizards of the Coast is still using those trademarks, the visual trademarks, on their products on drive-thru that are print on demand. If you go and you're buying, T1, or you're buying, Basic or the Rules Cyclopedia, these all are still being printed. They're still for sale. These trademarks are still in use. So, and I'm leaving out the drama, by the way. I'm just giving you the fact summary. So it's going to play out very interestingly. Oh, and opinion here. Nothing to do with the trademark. The pricing for the Dungeon Hobby Shop Museum, in which they're now saying these prices for table play is only for special events, but they don't say that, whatever. I really do personally enjoy the company when I can see them, of people within the industry, people like Ernie Gygax, people like Tim Kask. And I enjoy the opportunity to sit down and game with them if it happens. And as much as I enjoy it, I would not put $1,000 to sit at the table for 4 hours with anybody, unless maybe the money was going to charity. That's opinion. So,
well, even if it is, that's as from a business standpoint, it seems like so much hassle just to do this one little thing, you know?
Yeah.
That's like a big investment of not just time, but legalities. I would just rather come up with something close.
Here's the thing too, is, and I am sure, again, I'm speaking my opinion, so you know what I'm saying, I'm sure, I'm really not sure, is that the world of COVID has changed some of the dynamics that were involved in this project. So the world of COVID means that you don't have the tourism in Lake Geneva. You don't have the foot traffic. You don't have people that, you know, even locals are going to be going, I want a social distance. You know, I'm not really looking to sit down face to face. So there's issues in that. So, yeah.
So the main issue is that somebody is basically selling trademarks that they may or may not really
applied for. But here's the other thing too. Who owns the icon?
Right.
TSR. Yes, you can trademark the letters TSR as they're used, as represent your company, whatever. But the visual, the wizard, the half moon,
at some point that's artwork that's owned by somebody else.
Yes.
It's the trademark.
Right. So to license those or try to. To me, again, opinion, seems like shit. We had planned on making money back on the museum, but the museum aspect is, but maybe we can make some funds to cover our expenses, our investment, if we can get people in the OSR to license out one or more of these iconic trademarks. But again,
I guess I still don't understand. I mean, I don't understand why that would be any. Why would somebody want those? I mean, would you use that when you're writing one of your own modules? You put the TSR logo on it?
TSR logo on it, because now I'm apparently...
I guess. I mean, I just don't understand that. I understand that. I don't understand. There's guys that you see regularly at conventions and you can play in their games for quote unquote free. I don't understand spending $1,000 to game with them. It starts at 50. It starts more lower. So obviously most of these guys are not $1,000 GMs. And even then, I could see somebody with really deep pockets that just really wanted a game. Well, let's say Jim Ward or something. Right. I could see him dropping that money. And I would, if I thought Jim was going to get the money or be a big part of the money, I'd be like, yeah, you know, whatever helps Jim out.
But Jim would only get 25% to 30% at the most. Yeah, the rest goes to the
thing. So yeah. I just don't understand the business model here. It just doesn't seem, I mean, I don't understand the business model. Because I guess I don't personally care about TSR logos in terms of wanting them. And to me, I wouldn't spend that much money to game with. And I'm jaded because I see these guys every year. I've had my con. Yeah. I mean, so I'm really jaded. I wouldn't spend X amount of money to game with them because I can see them all the time. I've game with most of them. I've game with them whenever I want.
I've been cursed out by some of them. So, I mean,
I can see it. I can kind of see though that it's a destination. So you're going to the museum and then you're in the museum with people that were in TSR.
Right.
I can kind of see it.
It's a bucket list event, but here's the thing. What's a bucket list mean? It means it's one and done, right? So you might make money initially off it, but then where's
we're saying a museum, what do we mean by museum? I mean, do they have – I mean, I'm sorry, I just don't know much about – their business plan, do they have a set of every TSR item on display? Do they have a really rare and hard to find – I mean, you know, do they have stuff from Bill Meinhardt's collection on
–
I don't understand. I mean, what makes them a TSR
or
a
Dungeon House shop being a museum? Location. Is this the thing getting set up in Gary's old house?
Yes.
Right. So I mean,
and so they're going to be running games in Gary's, and so for Paul Stormberg's been running games in the basement of Gary's old house for I think the last few Gary cons, and they fill up. I mean, I can't remember what the fee is to game there, but I know they've been doing some off season, even not during Gary con. They still get people to come, especially from out of the country or people that, like you say, want to. But hey, you get five of your friends to go. Let's go game in Gary's basement, man. For for $500, what the hell? Let's do it. And so I guess I can understand that. I mean, to me, I just don't see much of a sustainable business model there. I could be totally wrong. This could be a huge hit. I know some of the guys at the Dungeon House Museum. I know some of the guys connected with it. So I don't want to. I'm not going to speak bad about any of them. I just don't get it. I mean, maybe that's just me. I just don't get the, what's sustainable about this model. And I've read everything on there. I've been trying to kind of read between them. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there's something here that people are just really jonesing for that I'm just missing. But I just don't see it. Sorry.
I think you hit on it. Like, we go to conventions. We've seen all these people. First, you have North Texas. Anybody that goes to North Texas, you're going to find people, or at least, when they were younger, you would find Frank Metzner. You were finding Tim Kask, Steve Marsh, Merle Rasmussen, Tom Lamb. These are people, and many others, that you get to just, sit down and game with, talk with, chew the fat. So the idea of saying, well, I have to go to a convention, or I have to go to this one museum to see these people and spend a little time in a game with them seems extreme. Maybe those prices, again, if you sold it as an extended weekend, it's a package deal, we're going to give you a game session with whoever, Frank Metzner for one, Ernie Gygax for the other. We're going to take you to a nice dinner one night, like one of those tours.
We're taking a tour of downtown, Lake Geneva, and we're going to go past the Horticultural Hall, and then we're going to go past, the old headquarters. Yeah, I can see that as kind of, like you said, a destination type thing, especially for people who don't have time to go to conventions or want more of a private experience. I know they were setting up something where they're going to have Ernie run some games for people in the Gary Gygax basement, and I can't remember what the cost was on that, but I think
I'm looking at the website, and it's not as much as I thought. It's, well, $1,000 per person to play with a legendary dungeon master. Price per person, gaming in this level of game, 25% commission, but the dungeon master is paid 10%.
They pay 10% at the lower tables. Once you hit the Once you look at the $1,000 table, it should say, I think, 25% commission on that one.
25% commission, but underneath that it says Dungeon Masters will be paid 10% of all game admissions for that game. And you know, like I know these guys need that money.
I thought what that meant is if we're not indicating it's 10%, if we are indicating it's what it is, I was giving the benefit of the doubt on that one. But still, that would mean, say, a table of six players, they're taking in $6,000, and somebody earning at $1,500, but the museum gets $45. That to me seems like a skewed up
average. I'm cheering for the thing, the museum. I really am, but I'm looking at those like, because knowing some of these guys, like, I don't know, I think a legendary DM, whether those particular legendary DMs like me or don't like me aside, they deserve a little more. I feel that they deserve a little more. Then that's my two cents. I don't know.
Well, no, definitely, because listen, they don't have or didn't have jobs that have pensions for the most part. TSR was, you weren't going to work for TSR and then leave with this pension parachute that would keep you healthy and wealthy in your older years.
Yeah.
That wasn't part of it.
There's some things been very public over the last few years. I mean, I know Jim Ward's health issues are one of the things, and Tim Cass' health issues also. I mean, these guys aren't getting any younger, and then they don't have health plans through TSR. I don't have anything wrong, but my whole thing is, I read this, and I'd much rather just give these guys money out of my pocket rather than go through the dungeon hobby shop. I'd just rather just call up, Tim and say, "Hey, Tim, we're going to come to town. Would you like $1,000 to run a game?"
No, $1,000 a person. I'd call up Tim and say, "Hey, for $3,000, he'll meet you at the library and run a game."
And
I was joking with somebody too. It's like, what happens if you pay $1,000 ahead for your legendary session, and you get a Tim Kask
TPK, the first 5 minutes.
Hey,
man. That'd be great.
Tim has said straight up to me that he's softened up on the TimCast TPK because he didn't like carrying that burden around all the time.
That would be classic, though. Or Jim Ward. I mean, Jim Ward will kill you in a Metamorphosis Alpha game. So, yeah, you spend money to get a Jim Ward game, and then you're dead in an hour. That would be classic. I'd love it. But, I don't know. Yeah, like I said, I just don't. I've read it over and over again. I just don't see the sustainable business model here. I mean, I wish the guys well. I hope it works out for them, but I don't really know. I guess I don't know what they're shooting for here. I don't know what their end game is. And I will say one thing. I don't know if I should say this or not, but the first thing they need to do is hire a PR guy, and then that's all I'm going to say. They need to hire somebody to do PR. Look, PR is a difficult thing. There's a reason you don't see my partner, Doug Ray, doing a lot of online stuff, because he doesn't like it and he's not good at it. So some people should just – there's a reason I do it, because, look, I mean, I have the face for it. Let's face it. I mean,
You got a smush.
Look at that. Yeah, but, you have to – it just has to be something that you know what you're doing. And I did customer service for many, many years. I'm still doing it now. So I feel like I can avoid a lot of the pitfalls that happen when you're not really into the business, so to speak. And I have a feeling that they probably should go out and get a PR guy.
Well, again, here's the thing. When it's your business, it's like your child, right? You're very protective of your child. And if somebody gives criticism, whether you feel it's constructive or otherwise, you get defensive of your child, and it's like, you can't say that about my child. Mm-hmm. But the honesty is, honestly, for me at least, as a member of the OSR, as part of this community, I want the community to thrive. And by the way, Mike, this comment is apparently made towards you.
Mm-hmm. I do have the face for it. Yes, I do. Yeah.
The face.
But, I want the museum to be successful. I think that they are probably going to be initially successful at selling those memberships, which, I'll be honest, I believe are worthless, because most people going to that museum are going to be one and done. But
It really sucks because, you know, what we really need in our hobby, and it's really sad, we're probably three of us here are probably not going to live to see it, is an actual RPG museum, which I've, you know, as long as I've been doing this, I've kept hearing rumors and people talking about, you know, we'd love to do this, but it's just, Japan, right? You know, well, I mean, most of the artwork that pretty much everything that's ever been in a TSR publications in a warehouse in Japan somewhere. So, yeah. Or Hong Kong, I'm sorry. It's in Hong Kong actually, but yeah, it's really sad that nobody's been able to put that together. A lot of it's because the obvious place you'd put the museum would be Lake Geneva. And it's just, it's not a big city. It's not a big tourist destination. It'd be like Cooperstown, you know, for football, except that we're talking football, not, you know, RPGs. Yeah. And so it's really tough. And we're just not going to live to see a place where you walk in, there's artwork on the walls and there's stuff in glass cases and there's tour guides showing you around and saying, this is the manuscript that Gary did this way. You know, because at this point, a lot of that stuff's scattered among, you know, a dozen or so really high powered, very wealthy collectors. And it's just, you know, and so it stinks. It's, you always want to kind of root for the guy that's going to, you know, say, hey, we're going to finally have a museum. But there's just never been a real serious attempt that I think I look at and go, this is a great business model. This could work. That just hasn't happened yet.
I'm looking at it like the business model is kind of come to Gary's house, play D&D with these legends is sort of the business model. And it's a really hard pitch when you're almost within walking distance of GaryCon where you can do the same thing for $60.
You know.
It's a hard sell, even if I'm a fan of it.
Sure.
It needs a little more than just the business model being come play D&D with recognized industry people. I want it to be come play D&D with recognized industry people and check out the, like you said, manuscript of the first white box or something.
Yeah.
You know, the notes from the first Dragonlance.
Right? I mean, any museum also, I mean, it's for research purposes too, right? I mean, you have these manuscripts here so you can see, you know, so you could have somebody that was maybe going to write a term paper or write a dissertation on stuff. You want to be able to have, you know, artwork, or you want to be able to have, you know, stuff that's historical to the hobby. We just haven't seen anything like I said, but most of the valuable stuff in our hobby is held by some, really nice guys, but it's in the hands of collectors right now. And, you know, the fact that nobody has really come forth. I mean, there's probably, you know, a dozen or less people in our hobby that own most of the valuable stuff in there. And, you know, it would really behoove those people. Those are the people that really have to come forward and say, look, I want to start a museum and here's what we're going to do, because they're the ones that really, you know, you'd have to go to, because they're the ones that have all the valuable stuff. I mean, the closest thing I can think to museum now is really going into the game hole and going up to Alex Kamer's bar and walking upstairs. And if you haven't ever done that, that's just an absolute amazing experience, because you just walk into this place. I mean, he's got everything ever published by TSR and Shrink, and he's got his glass cases with actual manuscripts there, and just the most amazing collection of stuff just up in that bar. And so I guess the closest, you know, we may ever come to seeing something like that. But even then, you know, that's not for the average person just to walk in off the street and see that. You know, that's something that people go to Gary Con or that just know Alex or go to Gamehole Con may be able to go see. So that's really, you know, so I'm always rooting for something like that. It's just I don't think it's going to come around in our lifetime, and I don't really think this is it in terms of being a comprehensive RPG museum. Now they're calling themselves the Dungeon Hobby Shop Museum, which you know, that makes me, you know, think that they're not a comprehensive RPG or D&D museum. But even so, I just don't see the sustainability. You know, show me something that passed, you know, in 5 years, I'll say, yeah, that is a great business model, because in 5 years, here's where you're going to be. You're going to be here. I don't see that. It just seems like, yeah, let's make some money and we're going to do this and that. I mean, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I don't know.
I don't know. I've had a Kickstarter shut down by WotC, and I'm looking at the website wondering why the website isn't getting shut down for some of the artwork they're using as buttons.
they've applied for trademarks that they haven't had approved yet for iconic artwork that they may or may not have the rights to.
They claim that
some of it is out of copyright, but
Jeff, these are Jeff HD remakes of the art. Okay, my bad. They're not using original drawings. They're using Jeff D redrawings of.
Oh, is this the Jeff D? Yeah, the Jeff. Yeah, because Jeff redrew all the stuff a few years ago. So yeah, that's yeah.
All right. So then, all right. So, but you still.
There's an IP thing because I mean I was redoing everything on my Kickstarter too with different words, but they were like, "Hey, you're treading on our IP." I'm like,
"Yeah,"
whew. But it's working for them.
God bless. Wow, we covered a lot of ground tonight.
We did. We did cover a lot of ground. This is our.
I was nursing my beer, and I've got like, an invisible beer. But if you could see it on screen,
that was the toughest kick. I'm stuck on it. That was the toughest kickstart for me. I wanted to be the one that brought Bargo back to the world. Damn it!
Oh no!
He was right there.
He was.
Yeah.
Damn that Bagro.
Sorry, Lloyd. That was your one shot, man. Sorry.
My claim to fame's gone.
Damn you, man!
It's good to see you, Lloyd. Even if it's only virtual, because I miss my Lloyd in North Texas and GaryCon and Gamehole. So
yeah, it's been really like because before COVID, I had a nice tour schedule going. I mean, TotalCon, SnowCon, North Texas, GaryCon. I went to CobaltCon. I mean. It was a full year of just going to cons and knocking around playing D&D and.
By the way, SnowCon, underrated and fun con. I'd love to go back someday. We probably will in a few years, but that's one I can't do every year. But boy,
it's hard. Cool. It's the dead of January, way up in the
January, way in North Maine. Yes, and I think
only mid Maine, but it's still.
We had our flights canceled on the way back last year. That was fun. Yeah, we had to drive all the way down south to catch a plane. But that was our fault. We should have my brother and I should have planned better. So
that's the fun part about AppleCon. You know, it's actually pleasant. It's in the fall. There's foliage. There's apple picking. There's cider. There's a lot of that kind of stuff. Antique shopping. So it makes it like this. I don't know how they do it. They do it in the dead of January because the cost of the venue is pretty cheap in the dead. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, I've gone up there a couple of times, two, three times, and yeah.
Yeah, it was Zach and my brother and I went 2019, had a blast. So
yeah. Well, and Edwin lives right nearby there.
Oh yeah, Ed was there too. Yeah,
it was. We can drag him out of the igloo to show up.
We had to walk past. So we stayed in the hotel. This is turning into a SnowCon extravaganza. But anyway, it's a great con. But we stayed right across the street. We had to walk through 6 feet of snow just to get to the venue. I mean, it says SnowCon and the name delivers.
To watch a Texas guy wade through a snowbank.
It's not pretty. It was not a pretty sight at all. I was gonna say what would be ranked? I mean, are we common DMs? I would feel kind of bummed out. Who gets to be common DM? Huh?
So what, you know, David T, hey, imagine signing up to that D&D museum place as a DM and being ranked at the lowest level. What a blow to your ego. I wonder if you can earn experience points to rank up.
I would be bummed out, man. That would just be, it's like, come on, man. Really? Seriously? I've been DMing since 1978. How dare you? And I'm sure you get that too. I wonder if somebody rolls in there like, yeah, man, I've been DMing since 81. Whoa, I'm a common DM. No way, man. There is no way.
I'm at least expert, if not, you know. Come on. Yeah,
you could have a game with Chris Clark, but you pay extra for the dad jokes, you know?
Oh.
You'd be in debt fast. Mm. He's a master of the puns.
Yes.
Yes, he is. Yeah, it might be painful, but it would be fun. and you wouldn't have to pay those prices. There you go. Well, Lloyd, thank you for joining us, man.
Yes.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And check out Lloyd's Kickstarter, Maximum HP. Just no, you know what?
Maximum HP number 4.
Yeah. Put in just I just Googled Google Kickstarter, Maximum HP. Boom, there you are. That'll be the first thing that pops up on Google.
Well, it's also got its own website. Maximum HP has its own Facebook group and all that stuff. I even did a podcast for a while. I gotta get back to that.
You should. Yeah, you should. You have a face for podcasting. A
face for radio. That's right.
Yeah. No, actually, you look kind of, you have this weird scholarly kind of look about you, but knowing you, you're not like that also. It's kind of funny because I see you. I'm like, man, that looks like a really wise old man there, just, you know, with his little white beard and everything. But knowing you, I know that's not you at all.
So. You know what's funny is my latest character is my alter ego. I've started playing 5th edition, and I know. But playing it on Roll20 made it a lot clearer. My core confusion with 5th edition was in the books. But when we started playing on Roll20, I started to get it. So my character is a gnomish druid, and he's kind of got a Greek accent, a little like Balki Bartokomus, and it's, I've just embraced the whole thing.
Oh man, you and 5e, that's got to be great.
You know, I railed against it for a long time. I fought the good fight, and it was just doing it online. The organization of the books was my problem. I guess I don't know, but I've warmed up to it, and
Roll20, the automation. Yeah, see, you can kind of hide the rules behind the interface.
Yeah, the rules aren't so bad now that I've done it digitally through Roll20. And I admit that I use, and it's cost me more than I want to say, but I have D&D Beyond feeding Roll20.
Oh, okay.
But I bought the D&D Beyond book so that I could write to 5e.
No.
But, it really is nice once you get in that headspace of, like you said, the automation gets a lot of the confusion out of the way, and now I'm like,
there goes the mini keg.
well, maybe we'll have some more information next week. Well, if you want to do some crit, I think the video experiment went well. Nobody dropped their trowel.
That and the fact that, you know, if we were doing this on Discord, Craig would have dropped at least twice.
The Craig bot. We didn't have to mess with the Craig bot. Yes. You know,
didn't have to
Craig bot. When the Craig bot starts, it's like hell, right? Now we're recording.
There you go. It didn't used to say that. So apparently they're saying that, so we can announce it to the whole room. Now recording.
We've had some issues with Craig bot the last couple of shows.
So this there were no issues.
Smooth.
And I were doing the podcast, every time we'd start the show, we'd be like, "Thank you, Hal."
Well, Lloyd, if you do kick your podcast back up, I had thrown this out in the podcast yesterday. I put it up today. If you go to tencarstavern.com, you go to the post for October 21st, 2020, or just go to the website, because there's a banner there. I've started a mailing list. It's going to go out probably every Sunday or Monday, and I'm looking for content creators, whether it's in print, a blog, podcast, vidcast, Kickstarter. Email me an update of what you're doing every week that's relevant, and we'll put in the mailing list and get it out.
Okay.
You know? And before I started this, we already had 25 people sign up for something I didn't actually announce until like late this afternoon, which isn't bad for a quick thing. And it'll grow, but because there's no central repository for what's going on. And although I carry news, I'm one post a day, and I don't catch everything. So if people email me at tankards.tavern@gmail.com, I'll know what's going on. I can put into the weekly mailing. So there you go. Well, again, Lloyd, good time with you flies, man. This was almost like going to a midnight auction.
Well, I could have.
Where are my horns? My horns are over here somewhere. Let me see if I can find my horns.
Oh, geez.
No.
All right. So for those of you listening to the podcast, I'll have you know that he could not find his horns. And those watching, he's wearing his headset. So, I mean, he can't put them on anyway.
I'm trying to be professional, man.
That's a first for us, dude.
Yeah. Those listening cannot believe how handsome we all are.
I can't believe it. You know, it certainly impresses nobody in this room, let alone people sitting in the room with us, I guess.
We've got a combined charisma of 100.
I'm turning myself. Yeah, I'm turned on. Just looking at myself.
All right, now we're gonna have the no Zoom incidents in this podcast live recording. None allowed. No. All right, folks. As always, we are in the midst of the world of the pandemic, so use your common sense. Okay, if you need, we're not medical professionals, not even Mike, but if you need get medical advice as to what to do to protect yourself and your loved ones, don't worry about the talking heads on TV. Talk to a medical professional that you trust, and follow their direction. As always, be safe, be well, God bless, roll those dice, and God willing, mañanas.
Later.